We played three games in 3 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Thursday, we won in regulation. Friday, we went into double overtime. We won in double overtime. And then Saturday, we also won in double overtime to win the Big Ten championship. That was our first Big Ten championship, and we had to play three games in 3 days. I'm pretty sure that's never been done.
Welcome to the First Beat Sports Podcast, where we talk with coaches and sports scientists to explore the latest in how performance monitoring is making a difference in the NCAA and pro sports alike. We're going to connect you with practical advice from the best in the business to help you take your athletes to the next level. On the line today is Cam Davidson. Cam is Assistant Director of Performance Enhancement at Penn State, where he works with the ice hockey, volleyball, and track and field programs. Among the topics Cam will discuss are transitioning from club team to Division I level, the value of monitoring intensity, and building sport-specific training programs at the college level. So let's get started. Here's your host, head of First Beat Sports USA, Benjamin Jensen.
Hello and welcome to the First Beat Sports Podcast. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Cam Davidson, Assistant Director of Performance Enhancement at Penn State University. Cam, thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
And how's life treating you at the moment?
It's actually going really well. Through all the restrictions and all that, it was fairly difficult getting athletes back and getting going again. But we're actually now to a spot where we've got teams back in bigger groups and hockey guys are back to one group on the ice. And it's just nice to have some normalcy there and actually be practicing for games here that are supposed to be happening in a couple of weeks. So it's nice to have some normalcy and have something to work towards.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. Yeah. So before we dive into the questions, it'd be great if you can give the listeners kind of a bit of background about yourself and career ending up to Penn State.
Sure. Yeah. Started off as a me kind of in the business was at Wyoming, University of Wyoming, where I wrestled there for a few years. And that's where I got into strength and conditioning and just loved what those strength coaches were about and loved the whole interaction that we had. And I've always been a fan of lifting weights, but, you know, I don't know how many strength coaches aren't a fan of lifting weights, but got into it there after I was done wrestling through injury. Really, I hurt my back and it was just one of those things where I tried to come back a few times and it just didn't happen. Me being in the weight room was a way for me to stay with the team. I didn't have any friends that weren't on the wrestling team, basically. So it was just a way for me to kind of stay with the people that I knew and liked. And that's how I got into it. And being an intern was different and fun at the same time. But it was a good couple of years of those guys, you know, Coach Scott Bennett and Gabe Teeple, Coach Kathy Crow Wagner were the main three that really helped me out and getting me to see what it was all about on the other side. And I fell in love with it. And once I graduated, it was about a week after Coach Teeple said, "Do you want to do this? There's a grad assistant job open at Marshall." I said, "Yeah." And I sent him my resume. And about a week later, I got hired. So I just packed my truck the next night and drove 22 hours.
Oh, wow. You know?
This is the research I did. I had no idea that Marshall was in West Virginia until after my first interview. It was just one of those things that it happened so fast. I was like, "Sure, I'll go do it. Yeah, let's do this." And I just had no idea it was going to be a cross the country thing, but excellent experience. And the coach I worked for there was John Sanderson. He's at Michigan basketball, has been there for, I think, 14 years or something. Really good guy. And he had five GAs with him. He was the only head guy. So us five GAs at Marshall was a great learning experience because we didn't know a whole lot, but we were so young and hungry. And he just kind of gave us the keys, so to speak. So it was just all of us young guys making some mistakes and working hard. And you know, back then you didn't have social media or a lot of podcasts or anything. So we were just diving into old books, you know, old texts of the Russian training and the conjugate stuff and yeah. Finding out what worked and what didn't. And it was a great year. I was there for a year and then John got the job at Clemson and he asked me to come down with him as his assistant. So I spent about 10 or 11 months at Clemson working men's and women's basketball, a little bit of swimming and diving. And then after that, I got the head job at College of Charleston and was there for 2 years where I met my wife who had played volleyball at Penn State. She was coaching at College of Charleston and she had an opportunity to come up to Penn State to be an assistant coach with Coach Rose and the volleyball team. And she said, "What are you going to do?" And I said, "I'm coming." You know, and it was funny because looking back, it was like, you know, it had to have been a hard decision going from a director to a volunteer because I had emailed the Penn State coaches and said, do you guys have a spot? Can I come up? And they said, "We have nothing. You're going to have to volunteer." Ooh, and it was funny though, because I was 25 at the time now. And I was like, "Screw it. I packed my truck and went from, you know, Wyoming, Colorado over to West Virginia. This is going to be fine." So back then it wasn't even a hard decision at all. Truth be told, my wife had a job. She actually got hired at Pitt and she was on the way there. That head coach, they called her and said, "Don't come. The head coach is being fired." And when she was going to Pitt, I was like, "I've got to go because I don't want her going up there finding some other dude." You
know? So exactly.
I had already made the decision to go with the family and for her to have that opportunity to come to Penn State and coach at the highest level it was an easy decision for me back then. Looking like right now, I don't know if I could do it.
Yeah.
But anyways, after 2 years, I came up here to Penn State with her and got in with the volleyball team basically right away. I was hired after about 6 months more as a part-time role for a couple of years. But I worked women's volleyball and all of track and field for about 5 years. And then when hockey came open, we got them to be a D1 team. They had a guy, and under some circumstances, he was let go. And so I became the interim hockey guy. And that was about 8 years ago. And so I've been with the hockey team and women's volleyball ever since. And it's just been, it's been a great experience and through a lot of different changes and things. And so this is going to be my, I believe this start in the summer, started my 12th year here at Penn State.
Wow. So you went from kind of middle of nowhere, Wyoming, to middle of nowhere, West Virginia, and then decided just to go with the family first approach. And it looks like it worked out really well for you.
Now I'm in the middle of nowhere, central PA, you know?
But hey, but it's Happy Valley, right?
Right. Well, I guess it's Hockey Valley now, if whoever you ask, but
that's true.
Yeah, no, it's been a really good experience and we love it here. So it's been great.
Cool. Well, yeah, let's jump right into it. So he's already mentioned 8th season with the men's hockey program, quite the ride from going from club playing in front of 1300 fans to Division I playing in front of 6,000 fans with a $100+ million arena.
Mm-hmm. The whole thing was exciting. You know, I just, it's so cool to be a part of, you know, somebody that was really an outsider coming in. I was just this interim guy. Throughout the whole apartment, you know, Craig Fitzgerald, you know, Fitz goes, "Hey, Cam's going to be your interim guy. Are you okay with that?" And the hockey staff was like, "Well, I guess we have to be until we find our own guy. You know, Cam can help us out until we hire somebody." And it just turned out that things worked out. You know, they liked my style, and I just kind of immersed myself into it. And those first couple of years, I knew nothing past watching hockey growing up as a kid. My very first hockey game was the 94 finals. I think it was Canucks and Rangers. You know, that was my first hockey game was the championship game.
Oh, wow.
And so I fell in love with it then. I bought my Mark Messier pads. We played roller hockey. So I bought some Mark Messier pads and we went out. That was my extent with hockey, just what I was watching. So it was a very steep learning curve of coming in and just learning this game. So it was really cool for me to do that, because year one with Penn State Division I hockey was basically my first year with Division I hockey. And it was just a very intense year of learning the game and getting my butt out there on skates and learning how to skate. What's it feel like? What do these guys go through? Just going through that whole experience and having Pegula Arena is unreal. You know, it's one of my favorite. I'm a little biased, but it's one of my favorites that we go to. I love an old barn here and there, but this place just rocks, man. The fans are excellent, very supportive. It's just a great hockey community.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about the experience there, the game day experience, that is something else.
It really is. The energy they bring. You know, we boast the best student section in college hockey, and I absolutely agree. That student section it's super steep stands. They're right on top of you and they're great. They all say stuff in unison. It's just a nice atmosphere. You know, I'm in the first couple of years before we had first beat and doing heart rates. I was down kind of sitting in the tunnel between the benches. Couldn't see anything. You know, everybody's in front of me and it was kind of wild. But as we did this, I moved up to the media booth, which is where I have the computer and the antenna and everything, and got kind of a front row seat now. It's been so, so fun, man. Just the staff and the team and everybody surrounding it is so positive. It's just a great atmosphere. I can't overstate that enough. It's just been such a great 8 years. It's extremely fun to be a part of.
I like the fact that you were given an opportunity and you were only, you know, you had the interim tag, but obviously you did something right to be able to continue the next year and up to 8 years now.
Yeah. And it's so funny because I had some success with women's volleyball. You know, they were really good and had my training program for them. And I was with track and field, mainly throwers. I had some really good shot putters and disc guys come through here. And that was going really successful. And so I kind of hung my hat on those training programs. Track and field was extremely Olympic weightlifting, like extreme on that side of programming. We snatch, we clean, we jerk, we do all variations of those. So almost everything we did for the first 2 hours of lifting was that. And we had about 20 minutes of auxiliary work. It was just completely minded to be really good at those lifts, be super strong and be good at those lifts. With volleyball, it was more volleyball minded, more of a, you know, they have pretty long practices and not a whole lot of Olympic lifting with them. You know, did some cleans and snatches here and there, but mostly just kind of a general strength and power program. And I just tried to shove that into hockey. And what I learned was, you know, the guys are built differently and the hips are, it's a different deal. You have to pay attention to it. And my knowledge of the of the groin and how important the pelvis was and how that oriented itself and how the abs helped stabilize the pelvis and so on and so forth. I don't want to get too much into that, but it was something you really do need to learn because the skating strat is so different and the stresses they have on the ice is so different from volleyball or track or any other team I had worked with over the years. It had to have been a steep curve, you know, and the coaches saw that, the guys started seeing it. And I would just ask the guys the questions, how do you feel on the ice? And that was one of the things where, admittedly, in the past, I didn't really care how they felt too much on the court or throwing, because I knew that the training program was important and we would feel good when we needed to for important games. So I didn't really ask them that much, you know, but for the hockey guys, I had to know, do you feel slow? Do you feel sluggish? Do you feel weak? How's your groin holding up through the whole game? How's your groin holding up through a season? And it was just different, you know, so it was just really important. So I would just ask those guys, not all of them, I'd ask the captains, you know, because there's going to be guys that don't always like lifting too much. I don't ask them, you know, but the guys that you can really trust, you go to and say, how are you feeling? And how is my strength program getting us better on the ice? And I think that was the main thing was, number one, just me showing that I cared and how they felt and how they improved. Are we getting faster on the ice? We got a lot faster on the ice when we started getting more D1 guys, not to put those club guys down at all. They worked their butts off. They were great. But really just guys that are more skilled at skating, obviously we got faster, yeah. But so that was more them than me, but just that whole learning curve of going to the coaches and just showing I was invested in what needed to be done. And it wasn't all about an exercise. It was more about how we felt on the ice and how we were going to be successful. So after that first couple of years, just the buy-in was good. And they decided to keep me on, and it's just been growing ever since.
Nice. Now, you touched on a few things there, kind of just making adjustments, changing your program, getting, you know, some more skilled players. But
sure,
what are some of the other main reasons you've been so successful from that jump from club to D1?
Well, I think it's just the coaching staff and the way they do things, to be honest with you. Recruiting is always number one, right? You got to get the guys. And all credit to the coaching staff. You know, Gads and his assistants are incredible at what they do. And this culture, it wasn't something that I came into and tried to change any kind of culture. There's been teams that you could be a part of and the coach says, hey, we need to change this culture. Can you help change the culture? And again, the buy-in for the hockey was, my job was to help ingrain the culture that the coaches wanted to set, right? So there wasn't a really solid foundation of what that was yet that first year. So I was a part of helping build that culture. And so getting those guys in that these are our four core values that we care about as a team. And I was looked at as a staff member to help ingrain those habits, the way you carry yourself. Are you positive? Do you care? Are you a great teammate? Is your work ethic good in the weight room, on the ice, in the classroom? And so it was one of the first times that I was ingrained into a culture to help build it, help ingrain it, help sustain it, because you've got to fight for that culture every single day. Culture's a buzzword, right? It's really popular recently. It's okay that it's a buzzword. It's important. But when you're in it, you've got to understand that you're fighting for it every single day and you've got to protect that culture. If you've got somebody coming in and he's not a type of guy that really embodies what it is to be a Penn State men's hockey player, it's not going to work out. That's part of my job. Part of my job is to help create that and to keep that. And really, it's all credit to the coaching staff. You know, Godowski was excellent in laying out what he wanted, not only to us, but to the team as well. And we all practice those habits. It's the coaching staff lives that way. The guys live that way. The trainers, the strength coach, the janitors that walk through our hallway. You know, their office is right across the hallway from the weight room. And we're seeing those guys every day saying hi. And they're the most positive people. It's just a fantastic place to be around. And I think that has a lot to do with success is you work so hard at being this kind of person and that's your culture. That's how you work. That's how you live your life. It's how you carry yourself.
Well, that's huge that you can step into like a situation where it's not on your shoulders that, okay, you know, we had two wins last year. We had 10 guys transfer out. You got to fix this. You got to create the whole culture. It sounded like you came into a really good situation and were just able to kind of build on it and make it that much stronger.
Yeah. And it was great. And the first year, our first year D1, we won 8 games. It was a long, hard year.
Yep.
But I can't remember a day where the guys came into the weight room and weren't positive and ready to go to work. Doing the things right when you win is easy. When you lose, when you're getting your butt kicked Friday and Saturday, having a long trip coming back and having to lift on Monday early, that's hard.
Well, yeah. So looking into some other aspects and when we talk about culture and kind of staying positive, and especially in this day and age of social media, And when it comes to the strength and conditioning community, social media is kind of a huge thing right now. What's your take on the kind of the influencer side of it? And you know, I'm kind of bringing this up that I see a lot of positive things, people exchanging ideas, some feedbacks, you know, job opening, stuff like that, listing those. But then I see a lot of the toxic stuff too, someone posting something and then a lot of people getting after them. Kind of what's your take on this social media side right now?
Well, you know, I've been on both sides of that really. I've posted some things that people come after me and it sucks. Doesn't feel good. You know, there's some vulnerability there in what you want to share and what you're doing. And my very first thought when you started asking that question was, I just wish people would stop judging from a snapshot.
Mm, yeah.
You know, this person puts a 5-second clip and you're going to jump on them. That's insane to me.
Yeah.
Because everything not to come to the defense of myself, because really there's going to be people that like and dislike what you do every step of the way, no matter what you're doing. So you can't concern yourself with that, but really it's this decision, this one clip that you're seeing on Twitter was a decision that probably has been made 8 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much planning involved into what you do and where you're going. And you know, what's funny is that one of the things that I had one clip blow up, I had no idea it was going to get so huge, but it was a Zercher one leg squat, right? And we had a guy, Arnie, one of our Finnish guys, was doing it. He came up. We were doing one leg squats on the bench that day as a team, weighted. And he just happened to come up to me and say, we were using kettlebells, sandbags, chains. That's how we usually load those. And he comes up and he says, hey, we do these Zercher style in Finland. Can I do that? I was like, yeah, sure. Go ahead. So I go grab the fat bar because I said, you know, this is going to be more comfortable for your elbows anyways. So we grabbed the fat bar, we put on the rack, and we put 95 pounds on, and he does 8 per leg, you know, pretty easily, you know? And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. I've actually not seen a Zercher. You know, I actually have never seen that before. So I took a video of it, put it out there, and it kind of got big. And I cannot be credited with that idea. You know, some people have DM'd me and said, yeah, where'd you come up with that? I was like, it was his idea. It was his strength coach's idea in Finland, I think, you know, but anyway, not to get that too far. It's just, I think social media is excellent when you can see things new and what people are doing, and they're doing things that people haven't done yet or haven't thought about yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Vernon Griffith comes to mind, sorry to name drop, but he's just him and those guys at VHP guys and girls at VHP put out some excellent content, just for one example. But it was one of those things that at first I looked at it going, I don't know how that's going to fit into my program. But the more you look at it, the more I talked to Vernon, it was like, wow, this is going to add just another dimension to how I think about programming. And that's what I love about social media, is that there's so much stuff out there that you can choose from. I don't know why anybody would want to hate on that.
Yeah.
Ever. Unless you put it in your program and you find that you don't like it, then don't use it. And so that's where I'm at. I love it and I hate it at the same time.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. And I think you brought up a very important point that when you just take it from the video and go and apply it is one thing, but you saw what he was doing, what Vernon was doing. You spoke to him about it,
mm-hmm.
and understood why and how it could be applied. And then it made a lot more sense instead of just applying what you saw for no particular reason.
Right. And one of the things he and I talked about was just what we said before, was there's a lot of people that hate on that. He's like, but do they realize this is just a tiny bit? Do they realize that we're actually lifting weight and we're trying to get our athletes strong as hell? But you know, this is just a piece. This is a movement piece, because I don't care what you squat if you don't move well.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't skate well, I don't care that you squat 500 pounds. I mean, it's great that you can do it. You're a strong guy, but let's get you to be a better skater. Let's get you to be a better mover.
Yep.
You know, that stuff is so important, which is why I called Vernon, because I'm like, I think this stuff that he's doing is great for hockey. And I was like, how do I implement this into my program? And the guys have been happier because of it. They've been feeling a little bit better. So I got to credit them, you know, credit to Vernon for that. It's been excellent. But that's my thing with social media. There's just a lot of, you know, a lot of junk out there. A lot of people quick to judge. And I'll be honest, early in my career, you know, this is probably back when I was at College of Charleston, I was young, you know, 24 years old, head guy. I thought I knew it all. I thought that I was doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
I was wrong. You know what I mean? Like I yep. just, you know, so there had been a time back then, that was 2009, you know, or 2007 when I first got that job. And I'm sitting there, you know, I'd see a snapshot and I found myself looking back on it. I was like, man, I did judge that. I'm not the perfect person. I've been guilty of that. But as you learn and you grow and you mature, you just learn that it's just a waste of time. You know, take what you want and use it, apply it. If it doesn't work, throw it out.
Yep.
If it works, boom, you have something that, that just adds to the toolbox. You have it when you need it. And whether it's used in a max strength cycle or a peaking cycle, you have it when you need it. And so that's what I love about social media. And that's what I love about these podcasts and some other ones I've done is it brings people to you. You know, I've had so many conversations that I probably would not have had I not been asked to do a podcast. So I really appreciate you asking me on here because it just creates conversation, you know. And if anybody ever wants to call me and ask me what I'm doing with hockey or volleyball or anything else, I'd be completely open to doing that. It's just, so that's what I like. That's what I like about social media. But again, it gets a little dirty and I find myself not posting as much and I find myself not getting on there as much just because in 2020, I just don't have time for it. I'm not gonna, that's one of the things I've learned to cut out of my life is the negativity you find on Twitter. It's just not worth your time.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely a balancing act there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, switching kind of more towards your role at Penn State itself. Mm-hmm. So over the last 8 years, you've helped 27 student athletes make it to the next level and play professional hockey. Why has Penn State been so good at this? What have you guys done to help those 27 players get up there?
Well, again, I think it comes from how you live and how you, it's again, that culture piece. It's not only being successful on the ice, but it's being a really good human being in everything you do, being positive in how you carry yourself, having a strong work ethic and how you do those little things really well. And the word care is really important. You have to care about everything that you're doing. Not care as in if somebody attacks you on Twitter. I'm not talking about that kind of caring. You really got to give a crap about what you're doing in the weight room. You got to give a crap about your grades. You got to give a crap about how many pucks you're able to shoot outside of practice. You got to care about going to work on your skating. That's from my view. Mm-hmm. I think from, again, I don't want to speak for anybody else, but I think from our coach's point of view, the way we run our program is we allow the guys to be themselves. You know, we don't want robots out there. And a couple of things that we say, we want to play with a lot of passion and instinct. And that's how we do it. Here's our game plan. This is what we're going to do on the ice. This is how we play. But within that structure, be yourself. Have some instinct. Have a lot of passion for what you're doing. And I think that that leash, the long leash to allow guys to do that, they get better at their game. Mm-hmm. Not only playing Penn State hockey, but they get better at playing their game.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point. I mean, on one of our previous podcasts, he was talking about how he was concerned about a lot of the athletes coming up that were kind of just system athletes, that they weren't, you know, being creative and doing other things and being themselves. So I think, yeah, that makes perfect sense that they're comfortable enough to maybe take some risks, do some other things that they might not be able to do if they were just applied to the system.
Right. That's kind of just brings another thought to my head. It's, you know, we don't want robotic people, but you have to be a smart player. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to take care of the puck. Are you successful in getting the puck deep when you need to? Can you read the gap and make the play that you need to make? Like if that guy has a tight gap, can you dump it and get it behind him without giving up a high turnover? You know, things like that, being super smart in the game, everybody does that at every level. So if you're taking care of the puck and you have a positive result in whatever you're trying to do on the ice almost every single time, that's what you have to do to be a good hockey player. But within those things, now you can be an individual and use the instincts that you have to now expand your game is incredibly important to be successful at that next level.
Yeah, and it sounds like kind of a lot of this is not just on the ice, but off the ice. And kind of going to my next point was, I'm assuming you have a fair amount of scouts coming to campus to see players.
Yeah, we do. They usually come to games and they'll stick around a little bit after the games here and there.
Okay. And is it something, obviously the players are good enough that the scouts are coming, they know they can play. Are they ever just talking to you about kind of, you know, what's their work ethic in the gym? How do they treat the other teammates and coaches?
Mm-hmm. They've come to me a few times to ask about that stuff. It's been extremely positive to be able to tell them that this guy is a phenomenal human being. You know, you guys are not going to find a better person. But on top of that, he's got a tremendous work ethic. On top of that, he's going to work on his game. On top of that, he works hard every single day. It's just been nice. And that's the best thing about the people we've brought in. And again, credit to our coaches to find those guys. There's so many things involved with why you need to have a strong culture and why you need to fight for that every day. And why you need to push that positivity and you push those positive habits and you push that caring. Because then at the next level, that's where it can matter as well. So it's been very rewarding to be able to talk positive about those guys.
Oh yeah, I would think so. And kind of, you already mentioned earlier that, so, you know, it's not just the players that live this lifestyle, the coaches do, you know, the other staff members. So going from a really nice topic to how about everyone's not favorite topic here, let's just talk about 2020 in general. So how has the program managed to deal with COVID-19? Kind of what was the impact and what have you guys done to deal with the hurdles that it's put in front of you?
Well, I think one of the main impact, you know, talking about hockey was just having a really hard time finding a sheet of ice. Hmm. I don't know that these guys skated a whole lot from when we had to go home in late March, April, whenever it was. And, you know, a lot of those guys didn't have a sheet of ice until they came back here. And we didn't come back until late August. right? So I think that was the biggest impact on those guys. And I can't speak to that too much, but I can speak as an avid amateur golfer. If I don't golf all the time, I feel like I am terrible. Okay, I might be terrible at golf anyway, but you know what I mean? Like that, yeah. you need to keep doing it. It's a skill, right? When you don't golf forever, it's just, you lose it. So those guys, they were concerned about that. So that was kind of a hurdle, but it was nice for them to get back, and we were able to get them some ice time, and we weren't allowed to go out there with them at all, but they got out there and got their legs back under them a little bit. And in training wise though, I think Penn State and everybody involved did an extremely good job with that. You know, football and volleyball were one of the first two teams to come back. And we set up a temporary facility in our indoor football turf. We set up 8 stations and we had them spread out like 12 feet from each other. And, you know, the regulations that were set, we just followed them and everybody was on board. You know, we get tested, wear masks, we're safe, we wash our hands, we clean the weight room after every session. There's been a few cases here and there, and there's been a kind of a spur of cases here and there, pretty much like you've seen everywhere, you know, but we're doing our due diligence and getting them what they need in quarantine. But now it's led to volleyball. We train in one group now, and hockey, we're training in two groups. I have 6 stations, 6 squat rack stations in our hockey weight room. So I run those guys in two groups just because of space. And you know, and that's what I normally did, you know, 2 groups with the guys was what we normally did. So now we're back to being able to do that. And it's full go.
Oh, wow.
The only thing that we do differently now is that we clean equipment between, you know, supersets, between our couple lifts here for a few sets, then we wipe it down. Then we move over here and do that for a couple sets and we wipe it down.
Oh boy.
It really wasn't that fun right away. You know, it was something that you had to get used to. We do have to wear masks when we train. We do have to wear masks on the ice when we practice. I'll tell you, that changes the heart rates a little bit. And it's just one of those things where you just do what you got to do. And Penn State, I can't say enough about Penn State and the way that they went about bringing the athletes back and making sure that we were going to do things right. And mm-hmm. It's been really positive. And again, our athletes here, you know, none of them have been negative about it. None of them have put up a fight, and everybody just said, you know, we're going to do it. We're going to do it right, because this is what we're going to have to do to train and play games. Yeah. We're back to just, we try to stay positive, and we make sure our athletes are safe. And I hope that it continues to do that once we start playing games here.
Okay. So you mentioned the lack of ice time there. Do you feel that you guys, you know, on the coaching staff, you guys feel that you're ready to go if you guys are fortunate enough to start games mid-November?
Yes, we'll be ready, 100%. And the thing that we really are positive about is we've actually had more time to train than we normally have, you know? And hopefully our guys do a good job. They go to their trainers wherever they're at, where they go home. Some of them do my program. Some of them do whatever trainer's program. And that's okay as long as they've got some eyes on them and they're working hard. And when they come back to campus, our first week back was normally we had to take flex days. I'm sure you're familiar with what those are. Mm-hmm. You have to take a certain number of days off every year on top of holidays and everything else. And so we usually took week one as we just got 5 flex days out of the way really quick. And then that gave me 4 weeks of training, because week 5 was, we usually had played that first exhibition game on a Sunday. So that week before was always in-season training. So I only had 4 weeks to train the guys and get them ready. Now, the difference was they had their ice at home and they were skating. Now, when we came back, I'm on week 10 right now. So we've actually had 10 weeks where the guys could get on the ice here. And those first 7-8 weeks, though, we had to go in 3 groups. We were going in 3 lifting groups and 3 on ice groups just to keep them really small. And that was hard on them right away, because you have 7 guys in a group. Mm-hmm. How do you run a practice with 7 guys?
Oh, man.
That's really hard and fatiguing pretty quick, right?
Yep.
So that was tough for them for the first couple of weeks. But now, you know, back as a team, we've got our legs under us. We're ready to go. You know, if we play in a week, we're ready to go.
Yeah, let's go ahead. Let's hit the quick fire round. So I'm just going to fire some short questions at you real quick and just throw your answer right back at me. Sporting hero growing up.
Dan Gable.
Guilty music pleasure.
The band Tool.
Tool. Okay. Favorite TV show?
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. Okay. If you could have been a pro in one sport, what would it be?
Probably MMA.
Okay, I was going to say, was it your wrestling? Actually, I want to touch on this too. So you obviously were a NCAA wrestler, but if you could have made it in either way, would you like to be an Olympic wrestler or would you like to be a WWE wrestler on television?
WWE.
Okay, good. Good call right there. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big Stone Cold fan myself, so yeah.
Yeah, man, I was coming up during the NWO days, you know. So, the big WCW, WWE wars, I was really into that back then. So I think I really just say that because I think it'd be more fun and you can make a little bit more money. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And would you take an overtime win or a 5-0 win?
A win.
A win.
5-0.
Okay. Let's flip the script a little bit here. Let's get over to the kind of the first beat aspect of things. We're always interested to hear how different teams are applying the first beat sports technology. So we're in season 4 or 5 with first beat, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I think this was going to be 5. I think last year was 4. This might be 5. Yeah, it's 4 or 5.
Okay. So what led you to choosing first beat from the beginning?
Honestly, it was just from recommendations from some other people I was talking to. I think Steve Volek was one of those guys and what they were using. And what really brought me to First Beat was it was really a decision of the two that we were looking at was Catapult or First Beat. And I was like, well, with Catapult, you got to have these cameras and everything, and I'm going to be missing data. I was like, you know what? I'm going First Beat. The biggest thing actually was how I saw you guys send out the readout for every guy, every practice and every game. So every session you have that printout that the guys see that just gets emailed to them. Mm-hmm. That was huge for me. I was like, you know what? That really was my deciding point, was it's clean. It's simple. They can read it. This is going to be big for us. I know this is an answering question, but I have to be honest with this. I was absolutely the strength coach that said, I don't want to have those because I don't want to have to spend 2 years gathering data before I can make a decision. Mm-hmm. In all of my ignorance, you know, and I was absolutely the guy that said, I don't know about my athletes seeing themselves in the red. Again, in all my ignorance. But because I didn't know anything about any of it. I didn't. I'm just being honest. I had no idea what I was getting into. It was just that snapshot of what I thought it was. And again, I went with First Beat because I saw that printout and I said, wow, a lot of that work is done. I might not have to spend a lot of time on my computer, you know, apart from everything else I need to do every day. I just thought it was the most efficient thing I had seen. And that's why I picked First Beat.
Nice. So those individual reports played a pretty big role in the decision then.
Yeah, that was huge. That was huge for me.
What kind of advice would you give to that coach who's just starting with First Beat? You know, if you could kind of go back to remember how you started with, what would you tell these new coaches right now?
Allow yourself to not know anything and just do it anyway.
Okay. Yep. Gather the data.
You know what? It's going to take some time for you to learn what you're looking at because you're not going to know. How do you know what you don't know, what you don't know? So just get the system and put it into place. The way I did it is year one, I didn't do much with it. You know, I didn't go to guys saying, you look tired. I wasn't going to coaches saying, oh, we were in the red and our trimp was really high. I didn't do any of that. I just kind of sat back and I let First Beat kind of be the background. I allowed it over time. That first season, I just allowed it to tell me what it was wanting to tell me. And I was like, I'll just let the information come to me. And now after a few games, maybe a couple months of games, if something stands out to me that I haven't seen before, I'm like, okay, what's that? And so that's my advice. If you're wanting to do it, just do it and then start learning about it and learn how to not like learn about it, get the knowledge yourself, and then learn more about it by how you have to educate your coaches and your team. That was year one for me. Didn't really affect a whole lot of change year one, but that was big for me. And that's what I hope that new people that are thinking about doing it, you should absolutely pull the trigger and just start. Because if you don't do it now, those 2 or 3 years are going to go by anyway. So you might as well.
Oh, that's sound advice, I think, because a lot of people get it and they feel the pressure that, you know, we've invested in this, we spent the money. I got to start giving feedback right away after, you know, the first week, second week of practice, where paint a really good picture there that you need to learn what these players' trimp numbers are, what the team trimp numbers are, what is a hard practice according to our numbers.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? You guys were, what else I saw, extremely fairly priced. What I know of it now and what it's given me now, I think that is an excellent price for what you guys are offering. And plus the support, like I can email you at any time of the day. And I'm like, hey man, I kind of need this. And you're like, boom, done. So that the whole side of it, the what it gives you, the customer support, the pricing, I'm a huge, huge fan of what you guys are doing. And I really appreciate all of it. It's been great for us.
That's great to hear. That's music to my ears. Yeah. And kind of on that same note, what are the metrics you put the most focus on?
So right away it was trimp. And I guess the best way I can explain this is kind of go through year by year and how I kind of utilized more and more. Here's my big problem is I'm not a fan of using anything that doesn't affect change. Like, why are we doing heart rate? Mm-hmm. So my first goal was, is it trimp? Is it training effect? Is it the calories? Is it the average heart rate? What is it? What is it that I'm looking for that's going to affect change that we can improve, right? And so for me, trimp's a good number. I like trimp because it gives me intensity. Trimp over time gives me intensity. That's my main metric. And so year one, like I said, it wasn't really doing much. Like, what do guys look like on practice? What do they look like in games? What is trimp? What's our trimp in practice? What is it in games? Why is it lower on a Saturday than a Friday? Does it mean we didn't play as well? Does it mean we're tired? I don't know, but I know it's different. And I know that almost consistently, it's always lower on a Saturday for us. I don't know if that's for everyone, but for us it is. And so, you know, what is that? And then the year two, you know, I talked to, you know, Devin McConnell, Cal Dietz, and Jim Snyder are the three guys that I talked to a few times, and they really kind of helped me understand what was going on. And I had a conversation with Devin, and I said, what's intensity and how do you do it? And how do you find that it helps you kind of compare practices and games? Because our practices are not as long as games are. So how do I know? Mm-hmm. How do I know what's good or bad? And he was extremely helpful and extremely transparent about what they were doing and how he has used it. And that had really helped me. And so doing intensity is what we did year two. And I said, you know, this is how we need to move our practices to allow us to feel better for games. And so taking the trimp over time of Monday, Tuesday. So our biggest days are Monday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, right? And what do those days need to look like? And when we play well, what does that week look like when we play well Friday, Saturday, or win? What's the result? And then what do those weeks look like if we look sluggish or tired or we lose by a lot? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, because there's going to have games where you look a little sluggish. You know, I wish that wouldn't happen, but we definitely have games where we're flying and then we have games that we don't. So I was interested in what that week looked like when we looked good, what that week looked like when we looked bad. And so taking that intensity, it lets you compare practices to games, and it lets you compare with how hard the CNS is getting hit with on each practice. Hope that's making sense. That's how I used it. Yeah.
No, that makes sense. And yeah, you touched on the one point that everybody has said the exact same thing when I talked to the first beat coaches, especially related to ice hockey. The Friday, Saturday trimp split. And it's always lower on the Saturday, no matter what the situation is.
Mm-hmm. And we've yet to figure that out. I don't think it's a big problem, because a lot of times we're still looking pretty good on a Saturday, but I have yet to come to that conclusion on why is it? Cause Friday for us is normally, you know, anywhere from 190 to 210, 215. And then our Friday is like 160 to 185. It's kind of been in that window. You know, there's been a few times here and there that it's a little higher than that, but that's generally what I'm seeing. So that's one of those questions that I need to ask you or somebody else at this point, saying, what's the deal?
We haven't seen a clear answer, you know, that it's not that there's more wins or losses on any particular day, or if, you know, the higher or lower one. Some of it's just, you know, the anxiety and the stress of just being in that first game. If you kind of look at it with, like, usually basketball and soccer as well, the first half always has a higher trimp than the second half. But yeah, there's no like kind of clear cut reason of why they've got that trimp split there.
It's never really bothered me that much, because again, the eye test of how we're looking on the ice, you know, there's been a few days that it's like, man, we don't look good. So just what I do now is I compare Fridays to Fridays and I compare Saturdays to Saturdays. It's tough to compare it to the day, but it's better to compare it to the week. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's what really helped me. So what was really good about that when I started taking intensity was, wow, these coaches know what the heck they're doing. And the way that I felt that it would help us the best was when Monday was here and Tuesday was here and Thursday was here, we were going to be ready to go on Friday and Saturday. And I kind of came to that conclusion before bringing that to coaches. And I started taking those intensities of practices. What I thought it needed to look like is what they were doing. And I was like, wow, they kind of know what they're doing a little bit. You know, these coaches have been coaching for 20 years. They're pretty smart people. So that intensity was super helpful for me. And if I can just skip to the end of year two. So here's the best thing that this intensity in first beat has done for me is it absolutely affected change for us in terms of how we're coaching kids on the ice. How do you get that from a heart rate? I would have never known this my first year or before I got this, because you don't know what the answers are, because you have no idea what the questions you're supposed to ask. Mm-hmm. You know, it took me a lot of time just staring at this thing going, I have no idea what I'm looking at. And I was getting mad. I'm like, what am I supposed to get out of this? And I purposely wouldn't call anybody. I was like, I want to just figure this out myself. I don't want to have this input that's going to bring something to light that I don't know yet. I probably should have called somebody sooner. So it took me 2 years to figure it out on my own. Okay. I found what we were looking at. I got a good feeling for what games look like, what practices look like. Our days in practice look good for intensity. We know what we need to do. Okay. Now what? I don't know. Let me start doing this. Let me start doing intensities for, let me get time on ice from the director of ops. Let me start getting in-game stats. And what does that look like? So if our time on ice is this, how is our trimp and intensity looking? If your time on ice was this, how's it looking? Our language was, our guys need to take smart shifts. You know, you take a smart shift and get off the ice. You know, you take a smart change. You don't get caught out there. You know, don't get doubled up. Don't make dumb plays that you can't change. We want fresh legs, right?
Yeah.
Well, smart shifts, after all this data that I started doing, so I started taking trimp for time on ice and even average shifts. And what we found was, and later I would find out that the NHL had already done research on this. so I was excited for nothing. I could have just looked, but I guess it was nice that I kind of came to the same conclusion. I was happy about that at least.
Yeah.
But the research out there says that if you're on the ice for more than 40 seconds, your intensity takes a steep dive. It's like that 40 seconds is the line where it's statistically different. And I almost felt like doing these numbers game after game, I almost felt like I was cherry picking, which you shouldn't do in your data. But I was like, man, that looks weird. What was his time on ice? What was his shift average? Wow, he was 46 seconds. And look how much lower his intensity is than the guys that are at a 30 second. Mm-hmm. It's meaningful. And so this seems like a little thing, but it was so huge for us because I went to coaches and I said, you know, this 40 second thing is really important. We should probably, and they knew that. They know they shouldn't stay out there. But our language and how we coach them changed in saying, take a smart shift. It started going to, you need to take a short, intense, smart shift. And so saying short shift got us changing fast. And where it also made sense was when we got into the Big Ten tournament, we played three games in 3 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Thursday, we won in regulation. Friday, we went into double overtime. We won in double overtime. And then Saturday, we also won in double overtime to win the Big Ten championship. That was our first Big Ten championship. And we had to play three games in 3 days. I'm pretty sure that's never been done. That was nice for us to know that we could do that. We were in shape to do that. But when you take that, so now we take the even average for the team and we see how many guys on the team were at 40 seconds or above even average. And in that Big Ten championship, not a single guy in any game in any period had an average above 40 seconds. So through that year, the language that we had changed because of our heart rate intensities and trimp and how that looked on the ice was smart, short, intense shifts. Get your stuff done on the ice and get your butt off the ice so we can always have fresh legs. Now, we could have absolutely lost a game in overtime. We could have lost, but we didn't. We won. And so we kind of hung our hat on, listen, this is what we're looking for. This is what the heart rate did for us. And we were super thankful for that because it changed our language and it changed the way some guys on the team thought about their shift. And so that's one of the things that we hit on all the time is if you're a guy on this team that takes too long of shifts, you will not play for us. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
It was insanely significant for us. We got that from first beat. We got that from looking at the intensities.
I love the fact that I wouldn't say it was a big change, but it was this little data that caused you to do just a little adjustment or a change that actually made a big difference in the long run. That's what I really like.
That's what I'm exactly saying is you don't want to make big change. I don't want to make big changes. I didn't want first beat to come in. Like, I didn't want that to come here. And we had to make this huge change to practice plans or games or anything. It's that little change that you can just tweak and you get that better. It's a simple change. It's a simple language. It's a simple cue. And it just changes your thinking a little bit. And so that little thing, it became a really big thing for us. And it's been very positive. And so moving on to the next year, because that's kind of what year two gave us. So next year I was like, okay, I know what trimp is. I know what intensity is. I know what our shifts need to look like. Now what? So then just for me being curious, you know, we were playing a game, I won't say where, but they didn't have any fans and it was kind of boring. And I was like, okay, let me start taking intensities of every segment of the period. You know, there's like three segments of the media timeouts, right? So there's about three segments every period. Mm-hmm. And I started taking, okay, I don't want to only know intensity for the game. Let's know intensity of the periods. And then let's start doing intensities of the segments of the periods. So now that's what I was doing during games. One of these games, I was like, okay, what does it look like when we win and when we lose? What intensities are we at during each segment when we win that segment? If the score is now 1-0 Penn State in that segment, what was the intensities like? If the score is now 0-1 other team, what did our intensities look like? And there was one game in particular. We were up in Wisconsin. We were up like 2 or 3 goals in the third period or something. Maybe we were up only one. I can't remember, but it was a third period. And it was a really good game. Nice back and forth game. They came back and tied it. I think they scored like 3 goals in that third period to tie it. Then they beat us in overtime. And it was also a game that our plane was late because of snow. So I had to sit in that visitor locker room for another hour, just sitting there, losers. And then, you know, we get home late and then you got to come and lift. Man, that sucks when that happens. But I kid you not, when we score goals and we win games, we score goals at our highest intensity points of the period. We give up goals when our intensity is the lowest.
Wow.
So when you get doubled up, when you take longer shifts, fatigue makes idiots of us all, and it shows when we get scored on. So again, that goes back to short shifts. So for me, it was, okay, coach, we were low intensity here. Why? What happened? Okay, we got doubled up. It wasn't like we were out of shape or anything, but we got doubled up on a change. Mm-hmm. The guys got tired, fatigue sets in, we get scored on. It's stuff you know. as a hockey coach or a hockey player, you know that. Don't get doubled up because that's when you get scored on.
Yep.
You know, but it was just one of those interesting things to me to see that when we were at our highest intensities of the segments, we score goals. And we're at the lowest, we don't score goals. So when we're out there flying and we're going short and we're going intense and we're shooting pucks and we're getting second chances, third chances, we're doing really well. When we lay back and we start slowing down and our trimp isn't as high and we're kind of loudly gagging around, we lose games. Hey, this guy in practice or a game is a super outlier. His trimp is like three times. So let me see if RPR really works. You know, I saw those preliminary tests where they would have a guy do a conditioning test and it would look like this. And then he'd RPR him and then it looks like this. And it looked better. I think Steve Volek was one of the guys that tried that. I was like, shoot, I'll try it. It's just been really all the way around. It helped me on the ice. It helps us in conditioning sessions. You know, we put it up during circuits in the weight room. We put it up doing, you know, cardio output, you know, like getting up to max heart rate for a full minute. It was nice to see on the first beat. If we did a spin bike, it took our guys 2 minutes to get to max heart rate because it was, you know, what gear do we have to be at? So the gear I had him at took us 2 minutes to even get to max. So it was doing like a 3 minute go as hard as you could go. I was dumb enough I didn't know that, but wearing heart rates helped us. So it helped me make my conditioning sessions more effective. It helps the coaching be a little bit more just a good cue here and there. What are these little changes? And so we just really like what it's doing for us. And the guys are starting to, they know that on the ice, we're looking for high peaks and low valleys. We're not looking for these shallow drops in heart rate. We're not looking for you to be in the red and yellow very long. It's nice when you can get there and it's nice when you can get out. You know, and some guys are getting to a 195, 200 heart rate. And when they're off their shift, they're getting back down to 55, 60. You know, so we're seeing these nice recoveries and it's all because we started looking at the data. And for me personally, I was able to really change my conditioning sessions to be a little bit more effective. You know, don't waste your time with 2 minutes that don't mean anything on a bike. It's just been really nice all the way around.
Nice. Yeah. And I want to highlight one point that I really think was important, what you said. It was going back a little bit, but when we were talking about the Friday and Saturday trips, and you're talking about the eye test too on Saturday, and so many people get caught up in the numbers that, hey, you know, that we didn't, well, why was the trim like this? That's not good. We got to do something to change it. No, you don't. You played well. They looked good. You won the game on Saturday. Don't worry about that. There was a different trim, right? You know, and comparing Saturdays to Saturdays is really what matters as compared to trying to compare that Friday to the Saturday and changing up practice next week to try to get a different result. No, just keep it simple. Compare the apples to the apples right there.
Right. And it's apples to apples with the athletes too.
Yep.
Which is what I found is the guys sit there after practice or a game and they sit and they see the readout, the printout. And I say, man, my trim was 200. What was yours? 180. Wow. Why am I so tired? You can't do that. So if you're somebody that gets in, because I didn't know that. I did not know that for the first year or so. Again, that's one of those things that kind of came to me. And I was like, you guys can't do that. Are you doing that? Really? You guys can't do that. I was like, you cannot compare anyone to anyone else. Some people burn hotter than others. Some people don't. Is this guy an extremely skilled skater as opposed to this guy that's not? Guess who's going to have the higher trip? It's the guy that can't skate well.
Yeah.
So you can't compare yourself to other people. And that was the toughest thing for me over the last couple of years was our assistant coach would come and be like, hey, he looks really tired. What's like his trim was way lower. Is he out of shape? What's going on? I was like, no, you can't do that. I was like, look at his other games. Don't look at his line mates heart rate. Just look at his other games because it's impossible to do that. And you'll get lost in the data and you'll get frustrated because you can't really do anything about it. So that's one thing that I've really learned too, is just keep it as an individual. You know, I encourage my guys not to compare themselves to anyone else. And yeah, that's something that's been really important for us.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, that's about all the time we have for this episode. Cam, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And if you like this episode and want to hear more like it, make sure to subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the First Beat Sports Podcast. For more information about us and our sports monitoring systems, give us a call at 435-363-9533. Or you can send us an email to sports@firstbeat.com. You can also visit us online at www.firstbeat.com. Thanks a lot for listening today, and don't forget to be with us on the next edition of the First Beat Sports Podcast.